Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Ethics Talk. My name is Hope May. I am joined by Dr. Michael Russo and Michael Quagstad. Nick may be joining us later on, but right now it's just the three of us. And tonight's show is actually a continuation of, I think it's our fourth show that we've done together that started off with a show on the information overload and evolved into a discussion about philosophy and last week its latest permutation, philosophy and justice. And so to just get you, the listener, up to speed with where we're going today, let me recap briefly what we did last week, what we were trying to do, I should say. Our aim last week was really to talk about the extent to which philosophical activity, and you should put that in quotes, philosophical activity, impedes other types of valuable activities. So in other words, philosophical activity, at least as the average person may conceive it today, given the nature of academic philosophy, which we distinguished from philosophy as traditionally practiced. Philosophy consists in a lot of reading, writing, discussion, reflection, argument, counter-argument, so on and so forth. And one could do this for one's entire life. We played a clip last week by Amartya Sen, who's being interviewed. And in that clip, Sen basically says something like, if you want to get at objectivity, you have to consider many, many different arguments. You can't just be have tunnel vision. You have to look at disagreement, dissension, and so forth. And so, of course, given the how many books there are, how many arguments there are to consider, and given the fact that writing, as we suggested in one show, is really like an extension of reading and maybe even the capstone of it. For example, when you read and take notes, that's really when you start to internalize it, but really like writing an essay or a paper or a book on something is when you really, really start to make it your own, internalize it, and truly understand it. And those of you who have engaged in the writing process know, too, that that's an interminable process. It's never-ending. You could keep writing and rewriting. And in any case, what we were trying to do last week is consider the extent to which these activities in which academic philosophy consists, reading and writing, again, may impede other types of valuable activities. So we started to talk about the connection between philosophy and action. And we had a really interesting comment by a caller who reminded us of Chinese philosophers, the Taoists in particular, who stress the importance of wu wei, which is translated as inaction, and we had a discussion about that. And so tonight what we are trying to do is discuss the connection amongst philosophy, justice, and in action, action wu wei. So all of these different concepts and how they relate to each other. It's a lot to do, and we will do our best. So first of all, regarding justice, the way that we got onto that topic last week was the clip that was played by Amartya Sen was in connection with a book that he's written called The Idea of Justice. And that got us talking about justice. But I just want to say, as we begin our discussion about justice, that when we talk about justice, it's there's many different types of justice. In philosophy, there's a distinction made between distributive justice on the one hand, so that is what are principles, fair principles of distributing, allocating the benefits and burdens of society. And under that head of distributive justice, you have different principles that are proposed as a fair distribution. So for example, there are some people who say that, well, we should distribute things to people who need them. So, you know, if someone does not need, Amartya Sen uses the example of a flute, if someone doesn't need a flute even though they made the flute themselves, then the flute should go to the person who actually needs it, so someone who has no other toys, for instance. One principle of justice would say, give the flute to the person who needs it. Another principle, this is still under the heading of distributive justice, would say, no, the person, the fair distribution of the flute is actually the person who made it. And so I don't want to get into these different theories of distributive justice, but that's one node of justice. Another node that is very, very common when people talk about justice is retributive justice. So when there's a wrong that's done and this person who has suffered the wrong wants to, quote unquote, seek justice. So these are different ways in which we talk about justice. And what we were talking about last week was this connection between justice and the law and just and unjust institutions. Dr. Russo, Mike, any additions to that summary that you want to make?
Not particular, except to say it's all very interesting and I would love to hear you talk more about it. As everyone, I think, who ever listens to this show on any regular basis knows, every show seems to be, you know, open to a further continuation in principle, and every one of these topics is so massive and giant that it's just wonderful.
Yeah. And Mike Klagstad, anything to add?
If I may, I just would like to point out that, you know, we talked about, you just mentioned distributive justice, retributive justice, and institutions, whether they're just or unjust in the eyes of the beholder. I just wanted to point out, as I'm sure many of our listeners know, that the ancients, as well as many modern philosophers, spent incredible amounts of time trying to pin down what this conception of justice should be, whether through intuitions or logical reasoning, what have you. But it's not limited to these few items we've discussed. I mean, there are vastly different descriptions or examples of what people think justice is. So it's not limited to these concepts we're talking about here.
Indeed. Actually, we have a caller, so I'm going to just take the call for a second. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Are you there?
No, I'm not.
Okay. This is Joe.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Okay. I'd like to put in my 2 cents.
Please.
All right. Justice is nothing more than an eye for an eye. That's all it is.
Uh-oh.
You know, I like pragmatic philosophy. This thing where philosophy has to keep going on and on and on about certain situations and opinions, it irks me. People want so-called justice. If you get hurt, then you go to the so-called justice system, but all it is retribution, regardless of whether it's done by strangers called the judicial system or whether you do it by yourself. It's an eye for an eye. It can be done fairly.
Wow.
It can be done unfairly.
Okay, well, there's this notion that permeates many theories of justice, the idea of proportionality. And, you know, the idea of an eye for an eye gets at that, I think, you know, on its most charitable view, that when you suffer a harm, then the just retribution for the wrongdoer is a proportional harm that suffered. But, Joe, you're raising a really great point, and it actually relates to a clip that we have where actually that view of justice is advocated. And the clip that I'm going to play, I think we have maybe played this clip before or discussed it or something, but it's from a movie called To End All Wars, which is actually from a book by the same name. And in this clip, these are actually POWs who start an underground school in their POW camp, and they are reading in their underground school Plato's Republic, which is about justice. We talked about this last week. It's only about a minute and a half long, so here comes the clip.
In the second book of the Republic, Plato says, "What will happen to the just man should he enter this world? Well, the just man will be scourged, racked, chained, and after every kind of misery, he will be crucified on a pole for all to see. Any questions?"
I've got a question. Good.
Sure.
My question. If the just man is treated as you say, then what's the just response? Roll over and let evil have its wicked way.
Well, what would you recommend, Major?
I'd recommend defiance. Justice for the captors. An eye for an eye.
At what price mercy?
Yeah, mercy. The last bastion of traitors and cowards.
So you would take a man and crucify him on a pole for all to see?
I would seek justice.
Right, so that's the clip. Again, it's from the film To End All Wars, an excellent movie. It's actually a true story. But, okay, so, Joe, you heard them say, or the character, one of the characters say, justice is an eye for an eye. That's what you're saying, correct?
I didn't hear him say that. I heard him say something about a pool and some other stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Did anybody else hear him say an eye for an eye? Or is it, am I imagining?
Did.
I don't know if I heard that catchphrase, but that's definitely what he seemed to be getting at.
I heard it.
Should I play the clip again? No, I'm kidding.
Thank you.
I will bet you, Joe, I'll bet you $10 that he says eye for an eye.
You know what? Now you're getting pragmatic. I like that. Okay.
You would
probably win. I mean, if you're going to bet $10, I'm sure a philosopher isn't going to bet unless they're sure. But I didn't hear it. Doesn't mean it wasn't said. The thing is that if you said it, cool. That's what I'm getting at. That's what most people believe it and want it to be. I should rephrase the believe. A lot of people want to believe that what they're doing is in harmony with their Christian beliefs, when in actuality what they really want is blood. So justice with proportional returns, I believe in. I don't think that if you get punched in the eye that you should kill somebody. But if you get punched, you should be allowed to punch back. That's justice. A lot of times people get into arguments. Then they get into physical conflicts, and then people want to know, both of you are involved, both of you get punished. And, that gives the incentive to somebody to start a conflict if both people are going to get punished, like in school. But, again, I'm a philosopher who believes in pragmatic getting down to the nitty-gritty. Unless, of course, people want to admit that what they're going to discuss for days and weeks on end is mainly for a discussion in and of itself. Then it's cool. You can always discuss it.
Like when you call into the show.
Thanks, sweetie. No, I try to call in and try to add some pragmatism to it. But that's my feeling on it.
Okay. Okay, good. So, Mike Clagg said anything, any response to Joe?
Well, other than saying that I partially agree with him, I'd just like to point out there are many situations which such a theory of justice doesn't cover. I mean, if nothing else, if not counterexample, I can certainly think of scenarios which that theory of justice doesn't solve. For example, are you familiar with the trolley problem, Joe?
No. Uh-uh.
Well, I'm just going to give you a simplified version. But let's say you're behind a lever and you see a group of people on a train track ready to be hit by a train. And there's a Y in the track, and you can pull a lever to send the trolley down the other track. But instead, you know, you'll kill a small child. And you have to work the lever.
Mm-hmm.
What's the just solution? Do nothing, pull the lever. You know, you can give some song and dance or some story about the right answer,
mm-hmm.
but as I'm sure you can see, I can mess with this problem all day long until, you know, I can change the numbers of people on either side of the track.
Mm-hmm.
I can, you know, include a windstorm. There's all sorts of different scenarios I can throw at you.
Right.
And eye for an eye really has nothing to say about that, if that makes sense. It's not the end of the story about
mm-hmm.
justice as far as morality is concerned.
Well, to me, the story doesn't seem to be about justice. It just seems to be about a situation where a person has some sort of control over whether he's going to kill A or kill B. It's just a matter of numbers. So, to me, I guess if there's two people on the right side and a baby on the left side, I would kill the baby. Now, if you
All
want
right.
to bring in other circumstances, such as do I know the people, you know.
Or do you know the baby?
Or do I know the baby? Yeah. If I know the baby, don't know the people, and the baby happens to belong to a good family, bye-bye people and hello, baby.
Right. Well, simply let me ask you this. Now, if we you said that it's not a question of justice as much as it is morality.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's look at the fallout from this situation. Let's
mm-hmm.
say that, you know, suspect, perpetrator, whatever you call it, citizen involved, Joe decides to pull the lever and kill the child to save five people. To him, it's simple math.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, how should the legal system deal with this? How should they say, was Joe just or unjust? Should they do some sort of hedonic calculus, you know, ooh, well, the pleasure of the five people that lived far exceeds the pain of the person who died, therefore he was just in his action? I mean, again,
why would the Justice Department have anything involved in it at all? If they do a simple investigation and they see that I have no choice but to either stop, which I can't do, or take the left track or the right track, then I don't see what the problem is. If I have to have a choice, then I don't see of course, in today's world, the law enforcement agencies might have a problem with it just for the sake of political expediency. But on a rational level, why would they have anything to do with it at all? I have no choice except to take either track A or track B. I can't stop. So if I don't know either party, then I go for the numbers.
Okay, I'm going to give one more crack at this and see if you buy my story yet.
Okay.
I'm just going to go with you here and pretend that, you know, the legal system says, hey, you know, Joe did what he had to do and it was a clinch decision, so we're not going to prosecute, we're going to let it be, which I do not think would be the case. But let's pretend that is the case.
Okay.
And the legislature and or interested, you know, public get involved and say, okay, well, there's lots of trains running loose down tracks after small children,
mm-hmm.
so we need to make a law to dictate how a citizen should handle
okay.
the scenario.
All right.
What should we write in the law? I think you can see what I'm getting at here, that this is no longer a question of eye for an eye. There's something clearly more complex going on here. And how are we to say, you know, that one law or another that dictates the actions of the citizen is just or unjust or otherwise? What? How should we handle this?
Well, I would say rational thought, but even though you brought up a situation which sounds nuts, that's the effect of unintended consequences. A law which is passed, which in effect is good at the time it's passed, can be bastardized over the years to really become a really stupid and harmful law. So, yeah, I can see, you know, people getting involved and being dumb over a situation like that. But what you should do, you have to do what you believe is right, because you're not going to stop other people's thoughts. If a law comes after you, then either, well, you have to fight it by hiring a lawyer who you hope is a good lawyer. But in terms of the existentialism of the situation, to me, it's just a matter of numbers, unless I know the people. Again, if the baby's, I presume, hopefully he's going to grow up to be a good citizen, and I know the other people, and I don't like them, they're gone, the baby is saved, and vice versa. If I know the baby belongs to a family that's producing an environment in which I believe the baby will probably grow up to be a shithead, then goodbye, baby, and the other people are going to be safe.
Okay,
well, I don't
actually,
mean to be too obtuse. Sorry. I don't mean to be obtuse or confrontational, but I think, unwillingly or not, you just kind of recognized my point. I think what I heard you say was there's this other part of justice where you have to do what you know is right.
Mm-hmm.
Did I catch you saying that? Did
yeah.
I, mm-hmm. Okay. So I think all I'm trying to say is that eye for an eye, not the entire story. Clearly there's something else going on here.
Right, and because, like, retribution is not the only node of justice that we're getting at. So, yeah, like, many people will say, you know, a just response when you've been harmed and blah, blah, blah. But, again, just going back to, distributive justice, that doesn't really, the eye for an eye doesn't deal with that either. But we do have another caller on the line. Caller, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah?
Oh, I know you. Oh, you ain't say my area code number. I ain't know if it was me or, you know.
Yeah, this means you. Do you have something to say about justice, constitutional justice, eye for an eye, or just listening, or?
Well, I'm just listening, but I mean, this is interesting, you know, because it basically goes down to concepts for me of what people have been embedded in different cultures, different societies from different parts of the world. Everybody gonna see different, you know, depending on your upbringing, adolescence, or experiences that you went through in life, you know, that determines your perception of what may be just or moral to a certain extent. But like, when you go through different generations and evolution of time of what was justice at one time may not be justice now, or you know. I mean, y'all can play the trick. Okay, go ahead.
Great point that, you know, your cultural upbringing may have different norms of justice and so forth, and these may change over time. And I know, Dr. Russo, you have, I believe, something to say about that, do you not? I mean, let me go back to the clip. And just, I don't know, caller. What's your name, caller?
My name is Elder Beatmaster.
The Beatmaster?
Yeah, Elder Beatmaster, or just Beatmaster.
Elder Beatmaster, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard the clip that we played from the film To End All Wars, but basically the claim is that the just man, and going back to Mike Klagstad's point, like the just man, think that in this clip, the sense of justice, when we're saying the just man, is being used in a sense other than like eye for an eye. But in any case, the just man has all of this bad stuff happen to him. So, like, the good man will be, you know, crucified and have his eyes gouged out and whatnot. And what is the just response? So, this, you know, I think, Joe, you may say, you know, were there no laws or whatever, the appropriate response is, you know, to do the same thing to the other person or something personal. So, Dr. Russo, you've been quiet, and my question to you is, do you have an answer to that question that is asked in the clip? Because I think it relates to your Beatmaster's point.
The question he asked in the clip is, which question do you have in mind here? At what price mercy or what have you?
No. What is the just response?
Right.
And actually, just to make things interesting, okay, given that Joe has, I know, right, but hey, let's try to tie this all together. Given that Joe thinks that your personal relationship to the person is relevant, so like if he knew whatever, the three people on the track, or if he knew the baby, that would be a relevant factor in what he does. And so let's pose. You know, someone that you know and that you love does something really, really horrible to you. What is the just response?
Good question.
I mean, you kind of set up my answer for me. If one tries to ask in the abstract, like how would a just person act, or what is the like governing principle that governs the way a just person acts, you know, eye for an eye or not, or some other thing, or what? I think that, you know, it's a very difficult question, and partly it can't really be answered in the abstract. I think a good metaphor that is used by Viktor Frankl is in his book, I believe it's in his book, Man's Search for Meaning. He says something like, you can't ask what is the meaning of life, you know, in the abstract, any more than you can ask what is the best move in chess. I mean, you can say it's the move that puts your opponent into checkmate. That's like the final move. That's a winning move. But in any actual particular game, it's going to be a different thing. It depends on how the pieces are organized on the board. Like, if I'm playing right now, how can I tell what the best move is? Well, it depends on the situation at hand, on the board kind of thing. And I think it's the answer about, you know, how would a just person behave is similar to that. I mean, it's somewhat dissatisfying, I suppose, but it depends. That's all you can say, really, in the abstract, ultimately. I mean, you can say things that kind of become a little bit empty, like you would do the right thing. Okay, fine. Well, I mean, what is that? Well, it depends. You know, to what extent does it make a difference if you know the people or not in the trolley situation, or things like that? It always depends on the situation at hand, you know, how to act in the way that is best. And I think this is one of the reasons why Plato and also Aristotle make justice, and more generally just virtue overall, a characteristic not of the action that is performed, but of the person who is performing it. It's something in the soul and not a thing that can be attached to, like, the action, like, you know, feeding the homeless or something. It might be a little bit, like, you know, preposterous, but you could surely imagine a situation, maybe a little bit unrealistically, but whatever, in which it might not be the right thing to do somehow. I don't know. So there are always like situational factors that determine what is the best action in that given case. As Aristotle likes to often say, action takes place, you know, amidst the particulars. It's like, in this situation right here and now, what should I do? You have to have a certain kind of characteristic of your soul, of yourself, of your perception that enables you to see, you know, what is best to do. And this is not really like relativism, like, well, you know, whatever you think is right, you know, that's right. No. It's, I don't know, to distinguish it, I guess we could call it, it's kind of like a situationalism, if you will. Like, there might be some, like, one best thing to do, but it's always, like, connected with, like, here and now in this situation. And so a just person needs to have a certain kind of characteristic within himself or herself that empowers one to see what that is and to act accordingly. So, I don't know, will retribution really, like, you know, change other people's behavior, or will it really, like, make things right? I don't know. Maybe sometimes, maybe not. So, and that's a little bit dissatisfying, but I think an overarching principle that, like, says how to act is really like a set of training wheels. It can kind of help you generally, but overall, you have to really learn yourself how to answer, like, right here and now, and it always depends on the situation. So all I can say.
Okay. And so, Elder Beatmaster, you're the one who brought up this line of it depends on the situation, and do you have any reaction to what Dr. Russo was saying?
I mean, you know, I don't even know how to respond, because it's like, for me, nature is not just. I mean, you know, I mean, we in the mind of man and civilization and all these ordinances and traditions and certain things just come into play and whatnot. I think we out of tune and out of sync with nature. All this is by divine ordinances. When you look at all the animals, certain things that certain how other animals attack other animals, this animal got to eat this animal, or, you know, for survival or whatever. You know, now we go into to the social structure of societies and whatnot. We pick little things, or this is justice and this is not justice. I mean, it's all mind-boggling to me, you know, and we can philosophize, analyze, and put it in all different terminologies, but back again, it goes to the individual, you know, in certain situations and circumstances. I mean, you might be a beautiful person and you probably never heard of the fly. I don't know, matter of fact, let me use Katrina as an example. Certain people there probably did, you know, live prosperous lives and did some certain things, but when they was put in a desperate situation and it was about survival of the fittest, you know, a side of them came out that they probably never would have never even caught, came out, or they didn't even know existed.
Right, so the different circumstances will bring out different behavior patterns, and I think this goes back to Dr. Russo's point about something inside of you, and, you know, if you don't have, like, the correct virtues, right, and, like, the correct training, and you don't know how to respond in, you know, Dr. Russo, you mentioned Frankl, and I don't know if you know.
But whose standards, though, are correct? That's what I want to know. I mean, like you said, you don't have the correct training, the correct virtues. Well, by whose standards are they correct?
Well, good. So going back to Joe's point about Joe's intuition that whether or not you know the person and are in, like, a friendly relationship, because you may know them and think that they're an a-hole, right? So, like, let's suppose, like, you know the person and you have, like, a friendly feeling towards them.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to Dr. Russo's point where, you know, it depends on the factors. And so I think that, you know, when we talk about the trolley problem, like, a relevant factor is whether or not you know the people, you know, at issue on either side. And if so, like, how you know them. And how well you know them. So let's assume, for the sake of argument, that the baby is your own baby. And, I don't know, your spouse is insane, and your spouse took the baby, and, you know, your spouse is like Medea and wants to get back at you by killing your own child.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's your baby on the track.
Right.
And so this goes to this question of how do you know who's right, and this goes back to the clip that I played last week from Amartya Sen. That was the question he was asked, and he didn't really answer that question. and I don't really think you can, but I think we can at least all five of us say, do we agree that, like, that's a relevant factor, like that it's your own child and, you know, you love him or her? Do we all agree that that's a relevant factor?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I like
to hear
I'm
that.
I'm saying that there's another factor that won't trump it, okay? What I'm asking is that going to be, like, a relevant factor, all things considered?
I mean, relevant with regard to how, you know, easy it might be for you to make a decision. If you find out that the child is, like, your own child, then it might be very easy for you to decide not to send the train down that track.
No, I'm not talking psychological ease. I'm talking about
justice. Exactly. Yeah. Whether it makes it, you know, whether that's relevant for the justice, I don't know. That's not obvious at all to me. I
still don't understand how justice is involved in this. This is not about somebody picking up a gun and just deciding to shoot, or going onto a trolley and just deciding to determine whether or not they're going to pick the left side or the right side. You are, according to what Mike's talking about, you are in the trolley. You have no choice. You're there. The trolley's going down the tracks. You either pick the baby or you pick the other people. So it's not about justice. Now, the justice system, I want to get involved, but it's still not about justice.
Okay, but see, when you say the justice, and this goes back to what we were saying, and I think what Mike Clagg said was trying to eke out of you. when we look at, like, the ancient discussions of justice, they're not focused on this narrow conception of justice as the quote-unquote legal system. They have a broader view. John Rawls, for example, uses the notion justice as fairness. And clearly it can't just be the law, because we have the intuition that laws can be harmful, like on a people, right? So what I'm saying is, and I think what Mike Clagg said was saying, Mike, if you want to jump in here, feel free, is that justice, like when you say, I don't understand how justice is involved in this, I would say that's because you're thinking of justice in this narrow legal sense.
No, I'm thinking of justice as an eye for an eye. And I don't understand how
an eye. You're thinking of it in terms of retribution.
Right.
Only.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's like more to justice than retribution.
Regardless of what goes through one's mind when they're about to make a choice, you know, whether you yourself, Joe, debate questions of justice before pulling a lever or before, you know, buying groceries, I understand your point that that's not what's running through your head. It's a choice you have to make. However, I still think it makes sense to talk about a choice someone made in terms of whether or not they were just in their action. I mean, there's a lot of different ways we can frame this. But I guess all I would say is, while concerns of justice might not be, you know, at the foremost of your conscious thought, it still makes sense to talk about what happened in terms of just or unjust, or how we should react to it.
All right. Okay.
I think. I mean, I could be wrong. And I'd also like to chime in with Dr. Rousseau and say that, in my mind, in objective theory of justice, my intuition is superior, rather than concerns of who you're friends with or who you know. I know, really late, but I wanted to say it.
Okay. Anybody want to comment to what Mike Clagg said? If not, then I'll transition to this other point that Elder Beatmaster made about like cultures, because the name of this show is something like Philosophy and Justice, Eastern and Western Perspectives. And we have been focused on Western perspectives, talking about Plato and Aristotle. And again, last week we had a great comment. Tony in Ohio called in, and he reminded us of the concept of Wu Wei, or inaction. So this is really nice, because it's a nice way of understanding, or trying to understand, what this concept means. And so, Dr. Russo, I'm going to throw this question to you, since we're on the trolley problem, right? So the Taoists, this is like Lao Tzu and Chuang Tzu, these are different from Confucius, okay? different Chinese philosophers. Taoists, Lao Tzu and Chuang Tzu stress the importance of what is translated as inaction. Now, on one interpretation, one could say, like, to practice inaction, which is like a good thing, one could say it's like justice. In the trolley problem, just putting this out for the sake of argument, I don't agree with it necessarily, but in the trolley problem, the practitioner of Wu Wei stands there and does nothing. He does not act. He just lets the thing happen, and he stands back and refrains from interfering with the flow of events in front of him. Dr. Russo, is that a correct understanding of Wu Wei? And if not, why not?
I don't really know. I mean, it's hard to answer, because I think these thought experiments, like this trolley problem scenario, are somewhat, I don't know what to call it. This is not to disparage such thought experiments, but they're obviously artificially contrived, you know, scenarios. I think it's a mistake, let me just put it this way, to think that Wu Wei, this Chinese concept, means simply to not do anything in, like, most ordinary way of treating that. So to just, I don't know, whatever the exact scenario of the trolley situation is supposed to be, to just sit there and not pull the lever with either way. I don't think that's the right way to interpret Wu Wei at all, actually.
Okay, and what is the right way then? And you don't feel strained by the parameters of the trolley problem.
Right, okay,
you feel like
thank you.
Better.
I mean, I think that the concept of Wu Wei in Lao Tzu and Chuang Tzu is not exactly inaction or doing nothing, which sort of evokes the image of, like, someone just sitting there breathing and doing nothing more. Different people translate that in different ways, and some people kind of characterize that as, like, not doing a thing that is unnatural or something like that. Or I think that really the notion that they have in mind, and this relates also to Plato's notion of justice, actually, is to not act on behalf of yourself as an individual person. So to not be sort of an agent acting on behalf of yourself and with, like, a personal ambition. I think that's really sort of inherent in this notion of Wu Wei, to let the sort of, I don't know, greater scheme of the universe be your source of motivation, the harmony of things overall. To act, as it were, on behalf of that is to not act as, like, myself, but to be part of the flow of events in some greater sense,
okay,
or whatever.
To help me understand Wu Wei, because I'm not claiming that I understand it at all, there's this passage, I mentioned it last week, it's actually on our website, ethicstalks.cmish.edu, under show resources, and there's, like, I think it says, like, select passages from the Taoist or something like this. If you want to download it, there it is, and sort of read it on your own. But, okay, so you're saying Wu Wei is not to be motivated by personal ambition, but to sort of, like, go with the flow of the universe, blah, blah, blah. And there's this story from Chuang Tzu. Chuang Tzu is fishing, and some prince or king or something, right, sends two officials, and they ask Chuang Tzu while he's fishing to please come and help the king administer the state. So Chuang Tzu has a very serene, simple, quiet life of fishing. He's approached by these state officials, and he says something. This is Chuang Tzu's response. I have heard that there is a sacred tortoise that has been dead for 3,000 years. The king keeps it wrapped in cloth and box and stores it in the ancestral temple. Would this tortoise rather be dead and have its bones left behind and honored, or would it rather be alive and dragging its tail in the mud? And the officials answer, it would rather be alive and dragging its tail in the mud. And Chuang Tzu responds, go away, I will drag my tail in the mud. Now, he prefers to stay and fish, and he rejects the offer of helping to administer the state. Why isn't it the fact that, you know, administering the state is not concordant with, whatever, the flow of the universe? Like, why can't we say, hey, the universe is beckoning unto him, like, through these officials? Come, help me administer the state. Like, he says no. So why is it in harmony with the universe for him to stay and fish?
You know, A, I don't know. B, I would say that perhaps what Chuang Tzu has in mind or is trying to get at with this kind of a statement is that if and this relates to what I had said before, actually, if you try to make some general abstract rule about how people should behave, it's never really going to work right if you try to enforce such a rule, because it's always so dependent on a situation that the sort of like most effective way to bring about, you know, justice or to be in harmony with the Tao or the flow of the universe or what have you is to behave and act in your sort of like intimate environment in ways that are, I don't know, for lack of a better word, just and good, and to, on the sort of like, I don't know what to call it, you know, that saying, think global, act local, or what have you. The act local part, I think, is an emphasis that is at play here. To create like general rules that society should follow is bound to not really always work. And so it's more effective to be a good person in some whatever sense in the immediate environment of your like intimate relationships. And I think the idea here is that if everyone were like that, period, case closed, solved. I think Aristotle somewhere says, among friends there is no need of justice. Like, there's no need of, like, figuring out what's fair, who should have how much of what. When you're close to someone and you love someone, this, you don't ask that question. And so if people individually kind of had that sort of sense about one another, the questions about justice would, I don't know, evaporate, maybe is a little bit idealistic, but would not have the same magnitude that they have. I mean, the groundwork would be there in the intimate relationships that people have on, like, a local scale or whatever you want to call it, where the virtue of justice in each person would be what motivates them and whatever, not to, like, launch into another thing, but just a gesture in the direction. As different, many different people have used a similar analogy, but in Plato's Republic, Socrates uses an analogy which he basically says, getting at the idea that, you know, my own personal good and the good of some other, like, citizen in the city-state are the same, is analogized by Socrates, where he says, if you get a pain in your foot, it's like it's not only your foot's pain, your pain as a human being, like, overall. And so when people in the city-state begin to regard, like, the pain of another person as just their own pain, it's a, something is wrong in the city-state, but that's when there will be, like, unity in the city-state, and when people, whatever, interact with one another with that kind of concern for the well-being of, like, people overall, boom, the
right.
City-state
will be just. And I don't want to, we have like 11 minutes left with four other people, so I have something to say in response, but I don't want to monopolize the few minutes we have left. Does anybody want to respond to Dr. Russo?
Well, I just want to say that, like, for me, I don't know if it's in response to this, because I believe that most of these, what we call philosophies from back in them times were cosmic consciousness of that time, and it was more spiritual, intuitive, or some people could say that we word philosophy has been transformed from religion. This was more spiritual and on a universal aspect than anything, and there was more rebels against the social structure at the time and conformity of the status quo, I would say, of the societies at that time, and it was more about the people and bringing the people together. That's only my, you know, and I'm not what you call formally educated or nothing like that, but, you know,
I would say you're totally right on, though.
Yes, agreed. Indeed, like, throughout the world, you know, there were, Chuang Tzu is reacting against Confucius, and Confucius is reacting against the order of the day, and Plato and Aristotle were reacting against the Sophists, who were reacting the order of the day, so it's the point. Very well made. Anybody else want to comment? Jump right in.
No.
Hey, can I throw something in there real fast? And I want to just tell you, because I am a poet, but I'm just real short. I'm going to just say like this. Tell me something. Am I wrong because I would rather do my own thing than conform to the insanity that society projects as correct? Check this out. I work for a week to get a paycheck. State and federal taxes are extracted, but then I still got to pay another tax on each and every dollar I spend after that, which is nonsense. I refuse to be a slave to the illusion of happiness when I'm getting straight pimped in the matrix, so I give them the gas face for the sole purpose of survival. I live in the righteousness of the universe, but by societal standards, I'm a living, dire criminal. I'm a born rebel.
That wasn't exactly quick. But, excellent.
But, I mean, I believe that's, like, in that same sense, like, you know, but it's for modern times.
No. I can see why they call you Elder Beatmaster. I'm going to say something if nobody else will. Just going back to... Dr. Russo's claim that true friends don't need justice, which is Aristotle's claim, Russo quoting Aristotle, and that if we all realize, you know, that we're all in this together and your pain is my pain and so forth, we don't need justice. And so again, like, I go back to the Chuang Tzu passage and, like, put in front of saying, I'm just doing this for the sake of generating more discussion, because I don't understand the passage. We need to talk about it. But so couldn't one say, like, Chuang Tzu, I mean, he has this opportunity, right, to really, I don't know, help other people, one could argue, put it that way, and he decides to stay and fish. And so couldn't one say that he's not in tune with the fact that his suffering is the suffering of his people? I know you're going to disagree with that, and I want to hear your disagreement, Dr. Russo.
I don't know. I mean, what can I say? Clearly, Chuang Tzu did more in his life than fish. We have his whatever writings and his whatever teachings, as it were. I agree, and I think it's part of the point of. I don't know, but I think it might be part of the point in terms of the methodology, if I could even call it that, of the Taoist teaching to present enigmatic sort of statements that kind of seem strange, like what is he saying? All he wants to ever do is fish. I still think, though, that his point may be that, to try to fabricate a set of rules about how people should behave is never going to finally and ultimately work. I think
he's saying is that he's just taking advantage of the god's stupidity, and he's obfuscating the matter, trying to confuse them so that he can just go back to fish.
Okay, but I mean, I don't think he means... I'm going to stay here and fish, and actually that's all I'm ever going to do. I don't care about anything.
He's saying to God, leave me alone, because he's telling the emperor, leave me alone. That's all he's saying.
Okay, yeah.
And a lot of people are attributing to him a philosophical concept that, this flow of the universe. I mean, anybody can attribute to anything, any type of philosophical concept. So, who knows? it could be right. It could be wrong. But why can't we take a look at it in its most base form and saying this guy wanted a fish. He was probably tired of being ordered around by the emperor. He confused the guards. They walked away. And he's saying, thank God. It's like a cartoon in Charlie Brown. And saying, they left. Now I can fish.
I mean... We could look at it that way, but it's just less interesting. That's all.
Philosophically, you can go on forever about the philosophical aspects on anything, sure. Yeah.
Oh, since we have like 5 minutes left, I do feel, the need to sort of like tie things together and ask the question, okay, so like look at what we're doing Some of us know each other. Joe, you're a friend. If you were on the train track, I wouldn't know which one you were. But anyway.
Well, I must be some friend.
is that
Joe?
Elder Beatmaster, likewise. But is what we're doing and having this conversation, right, about justice and putting out our intuitions and bringing up these ancient passages, does this have anything to do with justice? Anybody?
No.
I mean,
not by the date, but
all right, so Joe says no.
No.
Okay, Joe says no. Okay. Elder Beatmaster?
I say, but not by the day standards is what we understand in the justice as far as our systems and whatnot. I mean, we probably think of justice as, you know, we just think of our system and personal interaction between, you know, like you say, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, and stuff like that. But what we talked about, I don't think it had the same sense.
So you agree with Joe? No.
Yes, no.
Okay. Dr. Russo?
I mean, I would say definitely yes.
we could have a discussion about that.
In the sense that, you know, insofar as thinking through these kind of questions, and by which I don't just mean like, you know, analytically creating arguments that are clever, but I mean really like being serious and giving your heart and mind to asking, you know, about what is justice and what would a just person do and so on and so forth, I think, you know, in its way prepares you, if I could put it that way, or is one thing that helps to refine your sensibilities, if I could say it in that way, so that when you are in some situation, if you have given thought and reflection and attention and care to these kind of questions and meditated upon these things, it makes a difference to how you will think about and perceive the situation and when you're acting in an ordinary case and not just like talking philosophy. And I think that's really the arena in which philosophy was intended to express itself in the first place, not in like publishing papers and journals so that other professors can read them, but in expressing itself by how you act and live your life. And I think that reflecting on these kind of things, you know, in its way makes a difference. It depends on how much you commit and how whatever deeply you think things through, but even when you're like in the process of acting and you're just, I don't know, caring, if I can put it that way, caring and paying attention to what would the just thing be, it definitely makes a difference.
Cool. So we have one yes, two no. And Flagstad, you have the last word with 1 minute remaining.
Mike?
Sorry about that. I could just say that in 1 minute I'm on Team Russo. Shouldn't be a surprise.
Okay. So we have two yeses and two noes.
Uh-oh. Are you the deciding vote, Hope?
Oh,
uh-oh.
Man.
30 seconds.
It makes a major cosmic difference now.
I want to say this. That
you've got the lever.
That's right.
Great. Hopefully the time will run out before I can complete my answer. So I think that we need to work also with taking care, as Dr. Russo was saying it 60 seconds, he's telling me in my ear, taking care includes discussing like we're doing and actually like putting into practice with one's body. And I know Dr. Russo agrees with this because we're old friends. But these other types of activities, which actually we started talking about, right? So, and it's funny, we've come full circle once again. Like discussing things like we're doing now, a really, really important thing, but let's not just stay at that level of discussion. Taking care can take other forms and should take other forms. That's my two cents. With 10 seconds left, you've been listening to Ethics Talk. Thank you, Joe. Dr. Russo, Mike Klagstad, and Elder Beatmaster for your insights. We will be back next week, probably continuing on the theme. Good night, and have a great week.
Thank you.
Bye, all.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everyone.